You're listening to local programming produced in KUNV Studios.
The content of this program does not reflect the views or opinions of 91.5 Jazz and More, the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, or the Board of Regents of the Nevada System of Higher Education.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Sports Prep Live.
Sports Prep Live.
Where we unbox the mic and talk excellence in athletics. Welcome back to Sports Prep Live. I'm your host, Graydon Prescott. An incredible conclusion to the NCAA tournament, both on the men's and the women's side. There is a lot to talk about, some drama going on, and history made on both the men's and women's side. So you know what we're doing today. Graydon Prescott, KB, ready to talk about it. You ready to go?
I am indeed.
All right. We're going to start with the men's side. National championship game was between UConn and Purdue.
Yes.
UConn was the favorite to win the championship, and they did.
All year long.
Yep. 75-60. They defeated Purdue. Very balanced team effort. UConn had four players in double figures and another with 9 points, so almost double figures. And they made 6 threes, 9 of their 11 free throws. They out-rebounded Purdue. They had 10 more assists, and they had 7 less turnovers. So a pretty dominant effort by UConn. They led almost wire to wire.
And they had Coach Hurley.
And they had Coach Dan Hurley. So back-to-back championships for the UConn Huskies. Although Zach Edey, valiant effort, 37 points, 10 rebounds. Didn't get much help.
That man's a baller.
From his team. They only had 23 points. The rest of the team, 1 3-pointer, 15 personal fouls, 9 turnovers, and only 8 assists. Only one player on their whole team got an assist. So UConn wins the national championship despite Zach Edey's best efforts.
Right.
Your takeaways.
I think everyone kind of knew this was going to be the conclusion that we reached at the end of the season. I did believe that it was going to be a little bit more competitive with Purdue. Zach just did not get the help that I thought he would get. He will get Player of the Year awards, all that good stuff.
He did.
An outstanding athlete. Well, I think there's still Naismith. I know he got AP, but I think Naismith.
Naismith announced theirs first.
Okay. So and then Wooden Award.
Yeah, he won all three, I think.
Okay. Yeah. So he's definitely going – anything that he hasn't won, he's going to win. He's a phenomenal player. He just didn't have the help. Although,
yeah.
I did think it was going to be a closer score than it ended up being.
Well,
I'm surprised by that.
It would have been a closer score if his supporting cast scored more than 23 points. He scored 62% of their points for the tournament. Or not for the tournament, but for this game.
Right.
He averaged 30 points and 16 rebounds throughout the tournament. He was absolutely sensational. One of the more dominant individual runs that we've seen in a long time.
Yes, it was on the men's side. Yes, it was.
But UConn, they were the most dominant team throughout the tournament. I saw some stats. UConn trailed for a total of 5 minutes and 22 seconds
all
for
season.
The entire tournament. No, just the tournament.
The tournament.
They never trailed in the tournament by more than 5 points. They won every game by double digits. Most of their games they won by more than 25.
Right.
4 out of 6, I think they won by 25 or more. They became the first team to ever win back-to-back national championships by more than 15 points. Last year they beat San Diego State 59-76, so 17, and then this year 60-75, so 15.
We may be having this conversation next year. This team is primed for a three-peat.
Okay. I'm going to go out on a limb here and say Duke is going to have something to say about that.
They may.
Duke's got Cooper Flagg
coming
in.
Cooper Flagg is coming.
And then Duke has another top three recruit coming in.
But do not expect UConn to be intimidated by
Cooper. Oh, no. Absolutely not.
Cooper can ball.
He can.
Cooper can ball.
He can. Duke is going to be tough.
I expected him to have a little bit better showing in the McDonald's All-American
High
School.
It's an all-star game. It doesn't matter that much.
I get it.
Bronny had 15 in the McDonald's All-American game. What's he doing now?
Bronny is not on the level of a Cooper Flagg, and I don't feel like 15 is outstanding, to be quite honest with you.
It's third in
pedestrian.
The game. Yeah, you could say
so. So for him, that was a good showing.
Okay.
That was a good showing. But Cooper Flagg, I expected him to do a little bit more.
What did you expect? 40 points?
Something? No, of course not. But I expected him to hit 20.
20?
Yes.
What did he end up with?
Maybe 12.
Okay. Well, it's an all-star game. It is. So everybody's
But it got competitive. You didn't watch it. It got competitive.
No, I didn't.
Your high school coach was there.
He was?
He was.
Okay.
But it got really competitive down the stretch. I expected a little bit more from Cooper. Well, but Cooper's an outstanding player, but I do not think UConn is concerned that Cooper Flagg is going to be showing
up. They're not. They went 37-3. They were number one basically the whole season in the AP rankings.
And we know how this one power player thing tends to work out. We saw that in both the women's and men's game. Yeah. It doesn't always work
out.
Okay,
Duke is going to have a good team, though. Not
so is UConn.
I'm not saying that UConn isn't going to three-peat. They are sensational. They're very, very well coached. Dan Hurley is actually the younger brother of Bobby Hurley.
Correct.
Duke Blue Devil.
Who played at Duke.
Yeah. Bobby Hurley.
I wonder who he's going to be cheering
for. if that matchup ends up happening.
Because Coach K's not there anymore. So there's some divided loyalty that could be going on there.
It's still your alma mater, but...
It's still your brother.
Yeah. I'd probably cheer for my brother, personally.
Not sure, though.
Personally, I'm 80% sure. Just depends on, how the game is going or what happens.
Yeah, but those Warrior brothers, that's a strong relationship, too, right? When you go to battle with someone,
yeah,
that builds a really strong bond.
Yeah.
And sometimes it can supersede familial bonds.
Bobby Hurley in 1992 actually beat Dan Hurley in the tournament. Dan Hurley played at Seton Hall, and they went up against Duke, who ended up becoming the champions back-to-back. Right. And Dan Hurley, he got beat by Duke that year.
Well, he's Dan Hurley is doing his thing now.
Yeah.
And then some.
Yeah, he is.
So shout out to Dan Hurley. But yes, I do expect UConn is going to be in the hunt again next year, obviously, and this may be the first collegiate team in decades. I don't know if it's ever happened to three-peat.
I think UCLA did it with Kareem.
I was going to say, if there's anybody that has done
UCLA it did it would with be Kareem.
Wooden and UCLA.
Yeah, John Wooden, Kareem.
Kareem.
Yeah. So expect big things from UConn next year. Zach Edey's going to the draft, so I don't know what's going to happen with Purdue. Might fall off a little bit.
They're probably going to fall off.
They're consistently a good program, though.
They are. They're, for the Big Ten, but I don't know nationally if they're consistently a powerhouse.
Okay. Iowa State, they're returning a lot of guys.
Iowa State is great.
Yeah.
Iowa State is not UConn.
They're not.
Iowa State is a really good basketball team.
They are.
UConn is on another level. So we will see. We will see.
It'll be interesting. All right. It's Graydon Prescott here on Sports Prep Live, and I'm here with KB discussing both the men's and women's NCAA tournament finales.
Here we go.
So, on the women's side,
yes,
we'll start with the Final Fours because these were a little bit more memorable. We're going to do a quick recap of South Carolina's game.
Please do.
NC State kept it close for the duration of the first half. It was a close game for the entire first half. And then the third quarter happened. South Carolina outscores them 29-6 for the quarter. And that's pretty much all she wrote. They ended up winning the game by 17. And that was that. So NC State went out much more quiet than we expected.
Right.
But, this is a undefeated 37-0 at the time South Carolina team. Then, on the other side of the bracket, UConn and Iowa.
Controversy.
This was a big one. This game became, surpassing Iowa's previous game against LSU, the most viewed game of all time in women's collegiate basketball. Caitlin Clark had 21 points, 9 rebounds, 7 assists. Not exactly an efficient shooting night. 3 for 11 on threes, 7 for 18 overall. Nika Mule did her job very well.
She was in Caitlin's shorts.
Yes, she was.
The whole game.
Nika Mule was outstanding. She had 9 points, 5 rebounds, and 7 assists herself. She was spectacular the whole game. Aaliyah Edwards had 17 points and 8 rebounds. She kind of got outplayed by Hannah Stuhlke, who had 23.
Right.
On 75% shooting. And here's the crazy part for Hannah Stuckey, 5 of 7 on free throws.
Hannah did herself a lot of good for potential WNBA career.
She did. She showed up.
She's done herself quite well during this season and this tournament.
Yeah, she showed up. And I doubted her a little bit too much throughout the season.
Last year as well.
I wasn't as confident in her, but she showed up.
She's come a long way.
She showed me something. And then Paige Beckers, 17 points, again, not Paige super buckets. Efficient, not super efficient, almost the same as Caitlin. She shot 7 for 17, Caitlin was 7 for 18, Paige made 3 threes as well, 4 rebounds, 3 assists, 4 turnovers, same as Caitlin, but, you know, Paige isn't the primary ball handler on that team, that's Nika, and a 2-point victory for the Hawkeyes, 69-71.
These were two Titans slugging it out.
Yeah, this was a great game. UConn led by 6 at the break. Iowa had a good third quarter to tie it up. Yes. And then they jumped out to a huge start to the fourth quarter.
Correct.
Got it up to 10. And then, as we talked about with that West Virginia game, they kind of let the lead slip. And
not so good turnovers. Yeah. Right? They're never good, but I mean, really unfortunate turnovers.
Yeah, there was a ball. The play that stood out most to me, it kind of swung the game. Iowa was up by 5 with about 50-something seconds left.
Right.
And they brought the ball up the court, and then Aaliyah Edwards tipped it to the backcourt, almost to the backcourt. And instead of letting it go backcourt because it was deflected, and the rule is if a defensive player tips it, you can go get it in the backcourt. Kate Martin, I don't think, knew the rule. So she tried to save it
from going into the backcourt. Correct.
And she trapped herself because once she had grabbed it, now she's in danger.
Now you can't go in the backcourt.
Exactly. Yes. So she threw it away. Nika Mule got it, came down, and I think they hit a three.
Yes, they did.
And that made it a 2-point game. Iowa made free throws, and then UConn came down and hit another three. Nika hit another one. So it was 70-69 after that sequence.
Right.
And Paige hit the first three, and then Nika hit the second one.
Correct.
I was on pins and needles watching that game.
Sure.
And I kind of realized then and there, if that's how I was going to play down the stretch of games, there's no way that they're going to be able to beat South Carolina.
Right.
That was concerning.
It was sloppy. Yeah. It was really sloppy. Yeah. Even, you know, in the waning seconds, the Hannah Stuckey turnover, you know, trying to pass it to the corner when there was someone in the wing wide open.
And
I think it was Aaliyah Edwards. Maybe they got her hand on the ball.
Nika Mule.
Was it really?
It was Nika Mule. No, it would have been.
I thought it was Aaliyah.
Because Nika was on Caitlin. So I think it was Aaliyah, but.
And she tried it from to pass going out of bounds.
Yeah, but Hannah Stuckey tried to pass it to Gabby Marshall in the corner when she had Kate Martin wide
who
open.
Was open, yeah.
On the wing. And the worst part about it was Iowa had 2 timeouts, so she could have just called a timeout, reset.
She didn't have a pass, yes.
Yeah, but she did have a pass, but either way, you had 2 timeouts.
Yeah.
So Iowa did not do a good job of being aware of time and situation at the end of that game, but they still ended up pulling it out. So props to them. UConn made a huge push at the end.
The last play.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts?
Okay, so here's what I saw. Iowa was running an action to get UConn was running an action to get Paige.
To get Paige the ball.
The ball on the right wing. And Aaliyah Edwards comes up to set a screen near the free throw line extended right side. On Gabby Marshall, who was guarding Paige. And the screen, it was a good screen. Paige comes off to curl, and then the refs blow their whistle. Nobody knows what's happening. They call an illegal screen on Aaliyah Edwards.
Correct.
A lot of people have had a lot to say about this call. Here's what I think. Aaliyah was set. Her left elbow moved slightly.
Yes.
Ever so slightly out towards Gabby.
That's what I saw.
I saw it move, and I thought it was the right call. I think the argument that people are making is you don't make that call in the situation.
I vehemently disagree with that.
But here's the thing. If it's the right call, and it's the call you would make in the first 36 minutes of the game,
then it's the right call.
It's the call you should make in the last 4.
Correct.
So it was almost a perfect screen. And if she would have just kept her arm still, it would have been perfectly legal.
Absolutely.
But she extended her left elbow ever so slightly, which caused the ref to
And the thing that I don't like about this, you know, that play, the outcome of that sequence was not in Gabby Marshall's hand. The ref made that call.
Yeah.
Gabby made the play, and you can disagree or agree with whatever perceived flailing there may have been, or maybe it was just a good solid hit. But she has received death threats.
Yeah.
She had to remove herself from social media because people were saying the nastiest things to her about a basketball game and a play in which she could not control the reaction of the ref.
Yeah.
If it's a good screen, that play doesn't get called.
Mm-hmm.
But she did extend her elbow and her arm just a tad. Enough for the ref to make the call. And I agree. Whether it's a screen, a moving screen, or a legal screen, a travel, 3 seconds. If it's an illegal play in minute two, it's an illegal play with 2 minutes or 2 seconds left.
Mm-hmm.
And I do get the idea of you want to allow the players to decide the game. But in that moment, Aaliyah took it out of the players' hands and put it in the referee's hands. So if anything, not that Aaliyah would deserve any condemnation, and she hasn't gotten any, and nor should she. But if anything, the mistake was on Aaliyah's part, because had she not done that, that still would have been a really solid screen, gotten Paige the look that she needs, and who knows what would have happened.
Mm-hmm.
So I just really disagree with the fact that people have been coming at Gabby Marshall for trying to make a basketball play, coming off the screen. She gets popped. I'm not sure that she was flailing on that. That was Aaliyah's a big girl. She got stuck, and she got stuck pretty good. And the referee called it, and that's mm-hmm. that.
Look, here's the way I see it, okay? Gabby did what she could for the play. Aaliyah, again, it's basketball. Things happen. Aaliyah tried to set a screen. Her elbow moved just a little bit. There's pressure. You're going to move just a tad. Illegal screen. Whatever. Cool. It's a basketball game at the end of the day. And we've talked about this on this show a little bit before with Utah and with other situations in the past. At the end of the day, it's just a game. And you want to win a championship. You want to be in a position to win a championship, but it's just a game.
Although an important one, but it is
important
still
game,
just
but
a
it's
game.
A game.
Yes.
It's a sport. Like, it's not the end of the world.
Right.
These people are
especially
not,
for spectators and people watching.
Yeah, like, you don't know them.
Yeah.
You're not invested in it.
Right.
They don't care about your parlays. They don't care about what you think of the game. The officials don't care about what you think of their call.
Right, right.
They don't care. So the death threats are just too far, and the harsh comments and having to remove herself from social media, it's too far.
Yeah, and to say, you know, I've heard arguments even from some NBA players that it was the right call at the wrong time. Like, I don't understand that logic. If it's the right call, it's the right call.
Mm-hmm.
So I just don't agree with this, it's the right call at the wrong time ethos. The official made the call that was there to be made because an illegal screen was set.
Yep.
And Aaliyah is a big girl.
Gabby
is not so big. And so even the flailing or the reaction that Gabby Marshall had in that play, I think, was just trying to stay on her feet.
Yeah. At the end, I mean, Aaliyah was moving.
Yeah.
And Gabby was moving in the other direction. Aaliyah's bigger. It's physics. Gabby's going to take the brunt of the force.
Correct.
So that's what we have to say on that. There was also some outside controversy from this game. Diana Taurasi, former UConn Husky.
Man.
Sue Bird. People were talking a little bit. Some not so accurate things to say. And I'm going to let you lead this one off.
Really unfortunate, because I am a huge Diana Taurasi fan. She is a baller. She has been since her college days. You know, she knows more about basketball than most people will, or she's forgotten more about basketball than most people will ever learn. She's a savant and a wonderful individual. But here, I think she was woefully wrong. You know, kind of going at, and she would probably say that she wasn't necessarily going at Caitlin. I don't know if it's her allegiance to UConn, which led to these remarks, but suggesting, intimating, because now we're kind of moving on a little bit to the Caitlin side of this, intimating that there are levels to this in basketball, and Caitlin is going to find out when she enters the WNBA that she's not playing against, I believe she said, 18-year-old girls anymore, that she's playing against grown women who have mortgages and who have kids and so on and so forth. And the my only pushback to that, or my fervent pushback to that, would be everybody that came into that league went through that process.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody that has played in the WNBA has gone through, quote unquote, the transition. And they're not all great players. There are people in the WNBA that sit on the bench. There are people in the WNBA that get cut, as well it should be. Happens in the NBA as well, or any sport for that matter. There are people in the WNBA who don't get a lot of playing time. There are people in the WNBA who were not all-star caliber players.
Mm-hmm.
And for a woman who, at the time, a young lady, who was on a team, a college team, that was stacked, and I mean stacked.
Yep.
To cast aspersions on Caitlin Clark because she feels like Caitlin is either abusing or taking advantage of or not appreciating the fact that she's playing 18-year-old girls and not – and some of them are 19, some are 20, some are 21, some are 22.
Mm-hmm.
That she's playing younger women and not these older women that are in the WNBA, and that somehow that's going to be – this demonstrable difference between Caitlin Clark's college career and her effectiveness in college and then Caitlin's potential WNBA career.
It's not.
It's not. In fact, you know, for those who are uninitiated, although her scoring is prolific, it has been legendary. It has captured the attention of a lot of folks out there, a lot of fans, young girls and boys who want to shoot like Caitlin, who wanted to shoot like Steph. Although that is a part of her kung fu, as I would call it. Caitlin is most dangerous as a playmaker.
Mm-hmm.
Caitlin doesn't play with any five-star players in college the way that Diana Taurasi did. In fact, I don't know if Diana Taurasi, looking at her college game as I have, I don't know if she could have taken a team of 3 and 1 4-star players to 2 back-to-back NCAA championships.
There's nobody else in the history of women's college
basketball. I do not believe so. I know Diana couldn't have done it.
Nope.
I don't think Sue Bird could have done it. And nope. Shout out to Sue Bird. Love her too. And Sue Bird didn't say this, so I don't want to conflate, you know, the comments of these two women, these two outstanding women and legends in their own right. But I'm a little bit, and I think LeBron referenced this as well, I'm a little bit, you know, taken aback by people coming at Caitlin for something that she cannot control. She played the game that was in front of her. She played it well. She played it at a high level. She played it at a level that most people can only dream of, including most of the WNBA currently.
Yep.
And she is a tremendous playmaker. And when she's got, if she goes to the Indiana Fever, when she's got Kelty Mitchell to pass the ball to, when she's got Aaliyah Boston to pass the ball to, I mean, Aaliyah's been in the league 1 year. Aaliyah made the transition. She made it just fine.
Yep.
A former player of the year.
All-star.
What makes Diana think Caitlin's not going to make that transition? She's not going to need to go for 32 points a game when she's in the WNBA playing with, you know, another player who's on the top 5 in scoring in the history of women's NCAA Division I college. So I just, again, I take umbrage at, you know, the comments expressed by Diana and others going at Caitlin's head. Caitlin is a phenomenal basketball player, and you ain't seen nothing yet.
Yeah. I'll keep this short and simple about the so-called transition to the WNBA. This is not the NBA we are talking about. Now, these women are great at basketball, but the men in the basketball transitioning from college to the NBA. It's almost a completely different sport.
Right,
men take a lot more time to adjust. You don't see rookies making all-star teams. Aaliyah Boston was an all-star last year. Asia Wilson won the MVP in her second year in the WNBA. Candace Parker won the MVP in her first year in the WNBA. Right. People do not take a lot of time to transition in the WNBA. Now, you can get better as a player over your time in the WNBA, but the transition is not something that people have historically had a lot of trouble with. Diana Taurasi herself did not have that much trouble with the WNBA. In fact, her scoring went up after she left UConn got to the Phoenix Mercury. Her scoring went up. Lauren Jackson won the MVP in her second year in the WNBA. Sue Bird was the assist champion and a champion in the WNBA four times in her career. Early in her career, she was a champion with Lauren Jackson. People do not take a lot of time to adjust to the WNBA game because, quite frankly, there's not that much of a difference. You don't see people, you don't see women growing from, 5'11", 6 foot to 6'5".
Correct.
Between the ages of 18 and 22. Girls finish growing earlier than boys do. You can see an NBA player come into the league at 6'6 and end up 6'9. We saw it with Andrew Wiggins. We saw it with Paul George, Gordon Hayward. It happens. People grow in the NBA. They're grown men. They're physical, a lot more physical than college players.
Right.
What WNBA players, it's a very similar game. Same quarter length, same type of bodies that you will see. There are some bigger people because they're the best players of the best.
Right, right.
And not all of the college players are the best of the best. But Caitlin was the best of the best of the best.
Of the best, yes.
For years. 4 years she led the nation in scoring and assists in her first year when she was one of those 18-year-old girls playing against girls who were older than her.
And probably should have been the player of the year in her freshman year.
Exactly. Her sophomore year, she probably should have won it, but you can make the argument for Aaliyah. It that year. Caitlin had an outstanding year, but she kind of got bounced in the second round, so we'll take that one.
Right.
Junior year, national championship game, carried the Iowa team all the way, won all three awards. Senior year, same thing, national championship game, won all of the awards, led the nation in scoring and assists. First player to ever lead the nation in scoring and make the national championship game.
And here's the thing, you know, going back to this, and you're referencing the same point, Diana played alongside women who are currently or were in the WNBA when she was in college.
Right.
Like all that whole starting lineup and a couple of the bench players ended up in the WNBA. That is not the case with Caitlin Clark.
Mm-mm.
Maybe Hannah Stolke will make it. Maybe. But other than that, Caitlin hasn't really played with anyone who's going to end up in the WNBA. These women are going off to be doctors and lawyers and engineers, and they have this wonderful college experience, but they're not WNBA caliber players.
Mm-mm.
To take that group of individuals to two back-to-back NCAA championships is unheard of.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like Diana Taurasi to point out another basketball player coming out of college who did something similar. And you know, I just, while I'm on this issue, I think, you know, I think it was Lynette Woodard who had a scoring record prior to Caitlin's and came out and said, well, you know, she doesn't think that Caitlin really broke her record because there were no 3-point baskets when she did it. And because of that, you know, Caitlin's record is somehow diminished. And I know we've got to go here, but I will just say this. There were also no players across from you on that basketball like Caitlin is facing today.
Nope.
The amount of the level of competition that Lynette Woodard, and shout out to Lynette Woodard and her record, the level of competition that she had to face pales in comparison to what Caitlin Clark had to face in her pursuit of this record.
Yeah.
And if you take that Lynette Woodard and put her in present day basketball situations with these young ladies.
She's a bench player.
There's no way in Hades that she gets anywhere close to the record that she set.
And, you know, as she said, no 3-point line, whatever. You play the game you play. You play the game you play.
Correct.
And Pete Maravich had the record without a 3-point line. And, you know, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar broke the NBA scoring record and he made one or two threes in his entire career. There are people who break scoring records without shooting three-pointers. So to not have a three-point line doesn't make that much of a difference. I mean, yes, Caitlin was able to utilize the three-pointer to her benefit, but the game changed. I promise you, Lynette Woodard would not have shot 15, 16 threes in a game back then in an era where the three-point line was not thought of as a super high-value thing.
And may not even made some of these super elite teams in college division in Division I NCAA women's. I mean, it's a different game, different generation.
Yeah. It's completely different. All right, well, that's all the time we have for today. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. You can catch last week's episode on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Same with this one. And we hope to see you all next week here on Sports Prep Live. I'm Graydon Prescott, and as always, have a fantastic day, everyone. Thank you for tuning into this episode of Sports Prep Live. I'm Graydon Prescott, and don't forget to catch all of our episodes on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And be sure to follow us on Instagram or Twitter at Sports Prep Live. Thank you.